It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. For one brief season during World War II, Pennsylvania's two football teams had a difficult decision to make. With dwindling players, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Pittsburgh Steelers could either shut down for the 1943 season until many of their players returned from the war, or they could combine their rosters and form a unified Pennsylvania team. Although in the NFL records, the blended team was called the Phil Pitt Combine, its unofficial name became the Steagles. We're now joined by author Matthew Algio, who's written a book on the subject called Last Team Standing, How the Pittsburgh Steelers and Philadelphia Eagles, the Steagles, saved pro football during World War II. He joins us by phone from Mozambique. We'll explain why he's there later, but first, Matthew Algio, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's great to be with you, Paul.
This is a piece of Steelers history that is not all that well known among current Steelers fans. How did you get the idea to write about this?
Well, I grew up in the Philadelphia area, and I always kind of knew about the story in Eagles folklore. But it was only around 2003, at the 60th anniversary of the 1943 Steagles, in Pittsburgh, there was a ceremony before a preseason game between the Steelers and the Eagles honoring the 1943 Steagles, and they had the surviving members of the team there in attendance. And at the time, I was a public radio reporter, and I went there to cover the story for Only a Game, the public radio sports program. And I was able to interview many of the players who were there. And as I just looked more into the story, it just seemed fascinating to me that, A, this kind of thing could have happened. I mean, the National Football League today, of course, it's a multi-billion dollar enterprise. You're not going to see a shortage of players anymore. And B, there was so much else going on the home front during World War II. And so it really just seemed to me it was a story worth exploring.
And how did the players feel about combining teams? The Eagles and the Steelers were rivals in what was then a National Football League with only 10 teams, and it was down to 9 by this time because of the war. And these were bitter rivals. So the idea of combining a team, if anybody besides the fans didn't like it, it had to be the players.
Yeah, there was definitely some animosity when the two teams first merged. Training camp was held in Philadelphia. That's because the Eagles had more players under contract than the Steelers did. In the summer of 43, the Steelers only had about 6 players under contract. The Eagles, I think, had about 16. So they had enough players to have a team when training camp started in the autumn of 1943. But when the Steelers players arrived in Philadelphia, some of them found that they'd lost their starting job. You know, a guy who had been the starting tackle in 1942 in Pittsburgh now suddenly found himself in Philadelphia competing for the job all over again. And so there was definitely animosity among the players at the beginning of the season. As the season went on, there was definitely a spirit of camaraderie that took over. They were kind of a misfit group. They were underdogs, and they knew it. Between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, between the two teams, there had only been one winning season since they joined the league 10 years earlier in 1933. And so, yes, at the beginning, it was very difficult for the players. But as the season progressed, I think you really get a sense of the team really coalescing.
And whose idea was it to combine the two teams?
The owners. As you mentioned, the league was down to 9 teams, and there still weren't enough players to go around. And so it was decided that they would have to do more contraction. And it was proposed to merge two teams. Now, the hard part was figuring out which two teams to merge. There were actually two teams in Chicago at the time. The Bears and the Cardinals were also in Chicago. So it really would have made the most sense just to combine the Bears and the Cardinals. But the Bears were so good that the other owners were scared they would just be a powerhouse. And so they looked to Pennsylvania. And the owners of the Steelers and the Eagles all had a good relationship. And the other good thing for the rest of the league, as far as the rest of the league was concerned, is that the teams were so terrible, there was no danger of combining the Steelers and the Eagles and having them suddenly become a powerhouse in the league. And so it was advantageous for the rest of the owners to make sure they combined two really bad teams and not two good ones. And that's kind of how it ended up with the Steelers and the Eagles being the two teams put together.
And apparently the biggest challenge in merging these two teams was that the coaches didn't get along, and so you had to figure out a way to make that work.
Yeah, the Eagles head coach was a guy named Greasy Neal, and the Steelers head coach was a guy named Walt Kiesling. They're both actually in the Hall of Fame today, but at the time they were not friendly toward each other. And made it very difficult. They were named co-head coaches, which you could imagine today a situation that it was untenable. There was just no way. They were at each other's throats all the time. They had two very different philosophies about football. Greasy Neal was a modern guy. He liked the T formation. He liked to pass the ball. Walt Kiesling was old school. He'd played for the old Duluth Eskimos in the early days of the NFL. He thought you'd just run the ball right up the middle every time. And so there was definitely animosity. There was some hard feelings between the two. But they reached an understanding. And what happened was Greasy Neal became the offensive coach, and Walt Kiesling became the defensive coach. So when the Eagles were on offense, or the Steagles were on offense, the Eagles head coach called the shots. And when they were on defense, the Steelers head coach called the shots. And this is really the beginning of what we now is very common to have a defensive coordinator and an offensive coordinator. But this was something that was almost revolutionary at the time. And that's how they were able to sort of get along through the season.
The Steelers and the Eagles have distinctive uniforms and colors. And so I'm wondering how it was decided that the team would look going out on the field.
This was a very controversial question at the time. The Steelers, of course, had always been black and gold. The Eagles, their traditional colors were green and white. But there was a practical solution to the problem, and that was you couldn't really. It was too expensive to maintain two completely different sets of uniforms. And since the team was based more or less in Philadelphia, there were four home games in Philadelphia, two home games in Pittsburgh. The majority of the players were from Philadelphia. And frankly, Philadelphia had more bargaining power when it came to negotiating these things because they had more players. Art Rooney was really at the mercy of the Eagles owner, Lex Thompson, to keep the Steelers alive for this season. They really needed the Eagles. And so in the end, it was decided that they would wear the green and white of the Eagles. And so if you ever look at the uniform history of the Steelers, there's that one season in 1943 where they're inexplicably wearing green and white. And it's hard to imagine a Steeler wearing green and white, but that actually happened in 43.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with Matthew Algio. He is the author of the book Last Team Standing, How the Pittsburgh Steelers and Philadelphia Eagles, the Steagles, Saved Pro Football During World War II. Now, I'm wondering how the fans felt about this. I guess if you were in Philadelphia, you had more home games. The team was wearing your colors, so maybe you were not as put out by it as a Pittsburgh fan was. Seems like Pittsburgh really got the short end of the stick in this deal. How did the fans feel about it?
Well, the Pittsburgh fans did resent the fact that the team seemed to be weighted so heavily towards Philadelphia. That, as we said, Philadelphia got most of the home games. There were two regular season games and one preseason game in Pittsburgh. The fact of the matter is the team was pretty good, unexpectedly so. And by the time they started playing the games in Pittsburgh, the Steagles had a winning record. And as I said, the Steelers had only ever had one winning season in franchise history. Since 1933, the Eagles had never had a winning season. And so winning tends to mitigate a little bit, I guess, the negative feeling that some of the Pittsburgh fans had. And actually, the games in Pittsburgh were extremely well attended. And the press that they got was very positive as well. I think people were really just happy at the time to have some sort of diversion in the autumn. And the Steelers and the Eagles, by combining, were able to give two cities something to root for in what was really a very, very dark time in American history. And so that, like I said, I think that mitigated a little bit the negative feelings that Pittsburgh fans might have had.
Right. And as you say, 1943, the war was far from won. And in fact, there was no certainty that that Hitler and the Axis powers would be wiped out. And so the whole balance of of humanity was hanging there. And so, sure, people were looking for diversions. Baseball was kept going because FDR felt that this was a diversion people needed. The NFL was not quite, you know, the national pastime that it is today, Matthew. So what was the feeling about, you know, was there some ambivalence about whether football should even be kept going, professional football, because you still had the colleges playing?
Right. There was ambivalence about the NFL, and you're right. It was just a shadow of what it is now. There was disagreement among some of the owners who thought they should just shut down for the duration of the war. It was a very controversial issue about whether or not they should hang. Now, most of the players on the Steagles, and in fact, most of the players all around the league at that time, were generally 4F. In other words, they had been rejected for military service for some physical defect. You know, the Steagles had guys with bad knees, ulcers, perforated eardrum, bad eyesight. And so these guys were not able to fight in any event. And so I think a lot of people felt, well, this is a way for them to do something for morale on the home front, to be professional football players. Most of them also worked in factories full time, too. But yeah, there was no letter from FDR to the commissioner of the National Football League saying, I think you should keep playing, like he sent to the commissioner of Major League Baseball. The owners just among themselves decided to kind of muddle through the war.
The St. Louis Cardinals in Major League Baseball, or it may have been the Browns now, I'm trying to remember which St. Louis team it was, but they had a player who could not go to war because he had only one arm. His name was Pete Gray. He was an outfielder. Are there any,
sure,
are there any stories like that in the NFL, players who you know, had some physical challenge that they overcame in order to play in those days when anybody who could get out there was basically able to put on a uniform?
Yeah, nothing as dramatic as Pete Gray, who, as you said, was missing an arm. But you did have there were a few categories, really. It was guys who had some sort of physical problem. You know, they had guys who were just too old to be drafted, who came back out of retirement to play in the NFL at the time. And then in 1943, you still had a lot of fathers. Fathers were exempt from the draft until 1944, and then fathers finally were drafted. This was very controversial to expand the draft to include fathers. So while you don't have anything as dramatic as a one-armed outfielder for St. Louis, like I said, you do. It's interesting to look at the, you know, a lot of these guys had suffered head injuries. A lot of them had suffered head injuries. There was one guy on the Steagles, Tom Miller, who suffered a head injury in a plane crash. He survived, but was honorably discharged for medical reasons after the plane crash. And so these were guys who were already hurt, pretty banged up, coming to play a very physical sport. So it was really interesting to go through and look at some of the draft records of these guys. The whole idea of the draft, I thought, was fascinating, too. It's a big part of the book.
And you mentioned that there were some things that, not necessarily by design, that came out of this Steagles arrangement, this combination of the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Philadelphia Eagles put out on the field, like the separate coaches overseeing the offense,
right,
and the defense. And I'm wondering if there were other things that were necessitated by this arrangement that that the NFL looked at during the war years and said, you know, this is something that could remain a part of the game.
Well, for one thing, 1943 was the first year that helmets were mandatory because they wanted to protect the players, what few players they had left. But the biggest change in the rules during World War II was that the NFL allowed unlimited substitution for the first time. And so, you know, now now we have 11 players who play on offense and then 11 who come in on defense. Offense and defense are two completely different things. Well, really, until World War II, players were expected to play the whole game both ways. So you played, offensive tackle, and then when the other team had the ball, you just switched around to defensive tackle, or you were a wide receiver, and then you were a defensive back. So guys just played all 60 minutes, all 11 guys, it wasn't until World War II to actually save some wear and tear on these guys' bodies. And because there were so few players, they played a lot anyway, that the NFL allowed unlimited substitution. You could substitute anybody at any time after, you know, after a play. And this really revolutionized the game. I mean, it turned it into the modern game that we know today, where you have the, you know, platoon football, it's called. You had offense and defense. And so I don't think they really realized at the time what a change this was, what changes it would bring about into the game.
So the rule prior to this, was it like soccer, where you had a limited number of substitutions and you couldn't just...
Exactly. Yeah, it was... I forget exactly what it was. It was something like two substitutions a quarter, and maybe four in the last quarter. You could substitute players. So, for all intents and purposes, the 11 guys who started the game would generally be on the field. Most of them would still be on the field when the game ended. And it's amazing. I asked Al Wister, who was one of the Steagles. He was a rookie in 1943, and he lives in Oregon today. He's the last surviving Steagle. But I asked him, you know, what would happen if the Steagles played a team from the NFL today? And Al said, well, if we played under our old rules where you had to play the whole game, said, by the end of the first quarter, they'd be winning 100-0, but by halftime, they'd all be dead. Because these guys ran up and down the field all day. I mean, they were just in incredible shape. They weren't that big either. I mean, they're just like 225 pounds for an offensive lineman. But they were in such fantastic shape. And it was a very different game back then, no doubt about it.
We were able to get in contact with the soon-to-be 95-year-old Al Wister, who is alive and well in Grants Pass, Oregon, and asked him about his season as a Steagle. Al Wister, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir.
When the idea was presented to you to have the Steelers and the Eagles combine for the 1943 season, what was your reaction?
Negative.
You didn't like the idea?
Didn't like the idea, no.
How come?
Well, here you've been playing, you've been at war against these guys, and all of a sudden you find that they're going to combine the two teams. That's crazy.
Was there a lot of animosity between the two teams, and was it because of the rivalry between the Steelers and Eagles?
We didn't think too much of each other, and just didn't like the Steelers.
What was the coaching arrangement? How did the coaching staff go about making this whole thing work on the field?
Well, it was up to the coach, of course. It was up to him who would make the final decision. Fortunately, we had very good relationships with Greasy Neal, our head football coach.
Did you go with the Steelers playbook, the Eagles playbook, or a combination of the two?
I think primarily the Eagles playbook, because we were the team that was winning most of the time.
We know that you're proud to be an Eagle. Are you equally proud to have been a Steeler, if only for one season?
No.
No?
No, N-O.
Why not? Why not, Al?
Just because I don't like the Steelers.
Were you glad when the 1943 season was over?
Yes, definitely.
You were an all-pro for 8 of the 9 seasons that you played in the NFL, and the Eagles have retired your jersey, and yet you're not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Do you know why that is?
Yeah, because somebody has some feelings about me. They've got to have feelings about me, because there was no better tackle in the league than me.
What would it mean for you to be in the Hall of Fame, Al?
It would be great. It would be the highlight of my pro career. And why I'm not in there, I don't know. But I know this, that there wasn't anybody who played any harder and any better than I did while I was on the field.
The Eagles had some great teams. You were a part of a couple of NFL champion teams. What made the Eagles team such great teams in those days?
They were great football players. Great players and great athletes. And nobody was any better than they were, than we were.
Let me ask you this. Going back to that 1943 season as the Steagles, did you get to know the Rooneys at all during that time?
The what?
The Rooneys, the owners of the Steelers.
No. I didn't even want to. I didn't want to have anything to do with the Rooneys.
What would you say is the biggest difference, Al, between the way football was played in the 40s and the way it is today?
I don't think there's any difference. It was rough then, and it's rough now.
Well, Al, all of us Steeler and Steagle fans out here in Pittsburgh, we admire you, and we're honored that you took the time to be with us on the radio today. It's been our great pleasure to talk to you, and I thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling me.
Meanwhile, back in Mozambique, Matthew Algio reflects on the overriding lesson to be taken from the Eagles-Steelers merger during the 1943 season. And what is the enduring lesson we can take from this chapter? You know, years later, what was the overriding memory or takeaway from the whole situation?
I would say, really, aside from being an interesting trivia question, that the most important thing that came out of the Steagles and really all of pro football during World War II is that it kept it alive at a time when, you know, it was real touch and go for the NFL there for a while. And there was some thought that if the league shut down during World War II, that it might not be able to come back. And right after World War II, a rival league started up. I think it's called the All-America Football Conference. But there's some thought that if the league had shut down, it just would have disappeared during the war, might not have come back. And so really, I like to say that the legacy is the NFL today. You know, this, what's a franchise worth in the NFL? $1 billion. I think the Steelers, Mr. Rooney paid, might have been $500 for the franchise in 1933.
And I think he's making, really, I think he might be making a profit now, I think.
Yeah, I think the kids are doing okay. It's amazing what it's become. And just the Steagles were just one small part of making all that possible.
Well, it's a great story, and we appreciate your sharing it with us here on the radio and in your book. We've been talking with Matthew Algio. He is the author of Last Team Standing, How the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Philadelphia Eagles, the Steagles, saved pro football during World War II. He's been talking with us from Mozambique. And Matthew, before we let you go, why are you in Mozambique?
I am the Mozambique's leading Steagles expert, I guess. I am in Mozambique because my wife is a U.S. Foreign Service officer, and she works here for the embassy, the American Embassy in Maputo, which is the capital of Mozambique. So we're here for a 2-year tour. Just got here about 2 months ago, and we really enjoy it.
Well, good for you. It sounds like you're spreading the gospel of football to the continent of Africa. And we thank you for sharing the story of the Steagles with us here on Essential Pittsburgh. Matthew Algio, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome, Paul. It's my pleasure.